Offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. We are going through the book Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba, conversations documented by Dr. John Hislop, conversations that he has had personally with Swami and those that he has had the opportunity to be a witness to. Last week we went through a portion where the question was on living in the moment. That was the question that Hislop himself had asked Swami, and we had an entire discussion on that. The most important point with which that entire portion ended was that on duty, where Swami was saying that when it comes to duty, you have to weigh your options, you have to see future, you have to see the lessons that you've learned from the past. And that is where the discussion ended, where Hislop said, "Oh, that is what is meant, and now I understand it." That's how Hislop ended it, but we do not say that we've understood it, and that's not how we are ending it, at least that portion, because most of these concepts, really, if one has to look at it, it calls for a lifetime of rumination over mananam, as we say, and deep thinking. And I'm sure that even after 10 years, 15 years, if we were to read the same passage, the insight that it would give us would be much, much more than it is at the moment, right? Just like how it was 10 years back, if we had read this, what it would have meant to us would have been so much different from what it means to us today. And I think that's the beauty of anything related to Swami. Somebody put it, you're talking about an entity which is infinite, right? Infinity is what defines this persona that we're talking about. So everything that is associated with him, be it his message, be it his words, be it the experiences that was granted to devotees, everything has that flavor of infinity. The more you look at it, the more you go within, the more you will find and discover in that moment, right? That's the beauty of everything that's associated with Swami. That's the beauty of every conversation that we have come across in this series too. So we are not claiming that we have completed that part. We just had a discussion based on that. We only hope that Swami allows us to have an insight of whatever he has said. And with that, we are going to go to the next part, which is, I think, equally challenging. And before that, let's ask Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sairam Sai Prakash.
Sairam Prem. Yes, it has been a very exciting journey going through this conversation with Dr. John Hislop. And much of what Swami says, like you said, reveals itself to us as we go through life. And Hislop himself, being such an earnest spiritual seeker, has put forward such questions. And certain times, like you had mentioned, he gets the point,
right?
And we are still struggling to understand. That is because of his earnestness and his level of understanding. But the idea of going through these answers, which are always eternal, like in one of the conversations with Swami, which Swami had with the students on the veranda, Swami said, your mind should be focused on the absolute. It should be focused on the absolute. It should not, like, you are having exams today, so you are studying for the exams and you want to do well for the exams, in the exams. But these are all passing clouds. They come and go. Your mind should ideally be focused on the absolute. And all these answers that Swami is giving are all connecting us directly to that absolute reality. And that is why each of these statements reveals new meanings every time we revisit them, isn't
right.
It so?
And absolutely. It's like a professional farmer, if you were to say, someone who has had years and years of experience. There will be no restlessness in the farmer after he has sowed the seeds, because
right.
He knows exactly the work is done, and in its own time it will sprout, it will give its harvest. I think that sense of calm patience you could see in Swami. When
right.
You are reading a passage like this, many times I found you know, the mind becoming restless when you're not able to grasp it.
Correct.
Something is being conveyed. You get a sense of what it is, but you're not able to completely understand it. The mind becomes restless. You know, I'm not able to get this. But from the point of view of Swami, that restlessness was never there.
Correct.
Because Swami knew that the seed has been sown. You know, keep watering it with, you know, with your own efforts or sadhana or namasmarana or whatever it is. And with time, it will come.
Mm-hmm.
Everything comes from within. And that only that could explain the leisurely way with which Swami would interact with all of us, right?
In fact,
and everywhere.
There is a sweet incident in the book Satyasai Anandadai, mm-hmm. where one of, I think the youngest son of Kannamma, so he asks Swami, Swami, what is Atma?
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami says, now you have got to go to school. You study. It is not very easy to understand. But as you grow, you will understand everything I have told. You will understand. Very lovingly, Swami mm-hmm. explains to him. And even to Kannamma herself, Swami says, see, you all have got responsibilities in your life. You do those responsibilities, complete those responsibilities, do your duty, and then you come to me. And then you can focus on the spiritual life. But while doing those duties, also offer it to me. So how Swami says, sanctify your actions, I think that is kind of the topic today. So let us go into what Dr. John Hislop is asking Swami and the answers that Swami is giving him.
Right. So after that discussion on living in the moment, Hislop says, oh, that is what it is meant. Now I understand it. And then he says, another question which arises is, do actions come about because of Baba or by Baba? That is, action takes place because of the sunlight, but the sun is not regarded as the doer. Whereas it is said that Swami is the doer in respect to our actions. And Swami responds to that by saying, the sun gives light, but the sun also does work. It makes changes in plant life, for example. And Hislop says, does that mean that Swami is the actor, the actual doer in our lives? And Swami says, consider that you are an instrument of Sai, acts by using consider that you are an instrument and Sai acts by using you as his instrument for action. So the question continues after that, but maybe we'll take this chunk. Very beautiful. In fact, just when I was going through this yesterday, Sai Inspires was on the same example that Swami often gives. The role the sun plays.
Right.
The sun is the doer of everything, but it's untouched, you know, and the example that Swami was giving in that particular quote of Sai Inspires is very beautifully, you know, the picturing was very beautiful. We being on the surface of the earth, we feel that a cloud has come and covered the sun.
Right.
So you really look at it, the size of the earth itself is negligible compared to the sun.
Correct.
Then consider that cloud which is floating in the atmosphere, which is so much more smaller. But being in the earth, we think that, oh, this cloud has covered the sun.
Right.
From the point of view of the sun, it's one of the many planets and one small part of the surface is covered by a cloud. And Swami said, you know, you think that God is responsible for the miseries in your life and you deride him and you are upset with him. The Lord is where he is. He is doing what needs to be done and he's untouched by whatever you say or whatever you do or feel.
At the same time, there is this way of sanctifying your action by believing and offering everything to the Lord and knowing for sure that the Lord is the doer. See, at one level, we say the sun is there and it is not involved in our day-to-day life. But like Swami says, the sun also gives light and it's responsible for the plant life. So in a sense, His grace is what allows us to do what we are doing, and His energy and His power is what animates us in our lives. But there has to come an awareness that He is the doer. So the journey of life is such that it takes you from the idea that you are doing things to the fact that He is the one who's doing everything.
Right. And I think this is a question which comes very much, especially when I was going through the Bhagavad Gita, I think chapter 2, where, you know, Krishna very clearly says, the whole idea of the Gita is to overcome the doership.
Right.
Kartitva, as Swami would say. So because when doership goes, enjoyship goes with that. So you're able to do action in a manner, it doesn't attach itself to you. The consequences don't attach themselves to you. So the whole idea is to give up doership, right?
Right.
So the major part of the discourse is you are not the doer.
Mm.
But then in the second chapter, when Krishna is talking about the Atman, for a long time, Krishna gives a discourse saying that the Atman is neither the killer nor the killed.
Correct.
So which means you're not attributing doership even to the Atman.
Mm.
So the Atman is not the doer. Mm. The ego is not the doer. Then who is the doer?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So where is that doership coming from? And the analogy which often comes, I think it is an analogy given by Adi Shankaracharya too. So he says, you know, there is fire. Mm-hmm. And it's all in the confusion that partly comes out of language also.
Right.
So he says, there is fire. You put your finger into the fire. And what do we say? We say, the fire burnt my finger.
Hmm.
But the fire did not actively do the act of burning your finger. Right?
True.
The fire was just being itself.
Hmm.
And you putting your fire in the finger in the fire led to the fire burning your finger. Right, but when we say the fire burnt the finger, it is as much as saying that, you know, I shouted at somebody, or I hurt somebody, or I helped somebody. Where in that language usage we talk about active doership of me, out of my own volition, doing something. So when you say the fire burnt my finger, you kind of attribute that volition to the fire, which actually does not exist.
True.
So they say when you say the Atman is the doer or God is the doer, you're talking about that mere existence. Because of which everything else happens.
Very true. In fact, if you look at the lives of saints and you look at people who have achieved a spiritual wisdom, this is something which is a common thread in all their lives. They feel that they are an instrument in the Lord's hands. But surprisingly enough, if you look at the lives of great people, be it in any field. And one such who comes to mind is Srinivasa Ramanujam, the great mathematician.
Mm.
And his life is such a beautiful saga of, you know, complete grace of God. He says, goddess of Namakkal, she is the one who inspired this great mathematics in him. And from the source, he directly, he said, whenever I close my eyes, I can see drops of blood of mother. And those drops form equations. They form into these equations. And there's a very beautiful quote by Srinivasa Ramanujam. He says, an equation for me has no meaning unless it expresses a thought of God.
Right.
A mathematical equation, he says, an equation has no meaning for me unless it expresses a thought of God. So in a sense, every action that is being done is attributed to an aspect of God, is attributed to the source, and the source is directly. So if you analyze this, for example, the world has got so many great mathematicians, but here was a unique mathematician whose mind was calm, whose mind was absolutely nil, and therefore the Lord directly transmitted, used him as an instrument to give to the world such great revelations. Isn't it so?
And, I mean, absolutely. In fact, most of our listeners would have watched that movie on the life of Ramanujam.
Yes.
Right? The man who knew infinity, right? I mean, in that they contrast that approach of Thomas Hardy, the mathematician from Cambridge, I think, right? Cambridge,
yes.
Who mentored Ramanujam later.
Yes.
He was the contrast between understanding and intuitively knowing.
Okay.
You know, is very beautifully shown in that. Where Ramanujam says that, you know, I get it from the mother. You know, she gives it to me in this form. And he comes up with so many equations which kind of define infinite series and all that, but without any proof.
correct.
Without any working towards that equation. And it works, it is correct. But then Hardy tells him that, no, you'll have to come up with proofs. How did you arrive at this? So it is actually, really, if you look at it, it is very similar to any kind of intuitive knowledge, where a hint of what is shown to you.
Yes.
And you try to come to terms with that, try to understand how that works. And that process also, you know, further opens your mind to an intuitive idea. I mean, that's the whole concept of what is referred to as, what happens to the mantra drashtaras, as they say, the sages who gave us the Vedas.
Right.
In fact, I was coming across this particular chapter in the Gita where Krishna says, I am Omkara.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Amongst Vedas, I am Omkara, he says. So I was trying to understand that what is really meant that. You know, what are Vedas and what represents Omkara? And, all of a sudden, one of our teachers in the school or university, he messaged me and he said, there is one concept that Swami speaks about, the four types of sound or four types of speech.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever come across that? I'm looking for that reference.
Okay.
I said, sir, I've never heard this. What are those four types? He says, you must have heard, Swami has spoken a few times on that. He says, para, madhyama, vaikari, and, pashyanti. I said, sir, I've never heard these terms. So then I go back and read, and I realize that that's precisely the understanding that is required to understand what Swami says when he says, I am Omkara among Vedas.
Oh.
Right? The whole idea of that four concept is, what is referred to as vaikari is what you've already spoken.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm speaking here, I've already modified my thoughts into words and I'm expressing them in an audible form. So that will again form thoughts in your mind when you hear it and so on and so forth. So that is the final stage of any expression.
Expression, yes.
Vaikari, right? So there is one before that, which is called madhyama, right? Madhyama is, in language, I've already thought about it.
Okay.
Right? I want to convey something and I'm going to say it in English. So it forms in my, just a fraction of a second before, it forms in my mind, before I've already mouthed that word. So that is called madhyama. And it is said that before madhyama comes a stage which is called pashyanti.
Mm-hmm.
Where the thought does not have language.
Okay.
It is only in thought form. And if you are able to communicate in that level, language is not a barrier.
Oh.
You are able to see what the other person is saying, right?
Mm.
And that's why it is said all Vedas were seen, mantra drashtaras they are called.
Wow.
Right? So it is called pashyanti, a stage before you commit to language your thought.
Mm.
So that is why what the Vedas were given in a state which is actually beyond meaning. Today we are looking at the words and saying that in Sanskrit this means that, and that can lead to a lot of confusion, right? So this is that pashyanti is that state where you're able to see the other person's thing, and para is what is referred to as omkara. Para is that which is beyond. Even that stage of pashyanti, from where all the Vedas have come. So Krishna says that I am the omkara, the pranava, which is the source of all Vedas. The whole idea is that amanaska sthiti, as Swami would say.
Correct.
When the sages were able to absolutely still their mind, they were able to see something which was already there. Nothing was found. It was, nothing was created, but what was already there was found.
Like we were mentioning, all these topics are interrelated, like living in the now, and we've been doing a discussion on free will, and then living in the moment, and this doership, it's all a continuous flow of ideas. Like when you talk about meaningful action, now, why is action so important? You cannot escape action. That's what the Gita says. That's what everybody says. You cannot escape action. And in the Dhyana Vahini, Swami says, there are two types of action. Action that binds and action that liberates. So beautifully he says in the first chapter. So having known the fact that you cannot escape action, what is meaningful action? That is on one side. And on the other side, like Dr. John Hislop asked Swami, he says, Swami is the doer. So if Swami is the doer, are we to understand that we have to do any action, or Swami will do everything? And so this is the dilemma. that do we initiate an action,
right,
or it is going to be initiated nevertheless, in spite of us. And you know, here a beautiful incident which happened in the life of Ramana Maharishi comes to mind, which actually led to his realization of who he really was, to the deep inquiry, like action that liberates, for example. So he says, in his own words, he says, it was a very ordinary day, I think somewhere in 1890s. So he was in his uncle's room, in his uncle's house, and he was just sitting there, and he says, suddenly this intense fear of death came to him.
Mm-hmm.
And this intense fear of death, you know, it enveloped his entire being. And he said, what is going to happen? The sense of uncertainty and the sense of what's going to happen. He was extremely scared, lot of fear. Then what was the action that he did at that time? He said, he played to it. He said, okay, this fear having come, let us enact what happens when I actually die.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so he laid down. And he became stiff, and he said, he became like how a dead person would be.
Mm.
And he became absolutely stiff and started observing what is happening to him in the process of dying. Mm. And then he realized that the life force is going out of the body, and he is able to perceive that the life force is going out of the body. And then he says, if I am able to see that, then obviously I am not the body.
Mm.
If I'm able to see the whole happening of my life leaving the body, I am not the body. Then that set him into inquiry of who am I, who am I, who am I. So the action that he actually did was to be in tune with that experience. So if you were to analyze this whole situation, this is my own words. I'm not quoting Ramana Maharishi here, but this experience was given to him. Like a situation, like an opportunity was given to him. But he acted on it.
Mm.
And he flowed along with that experience to gain the maximum benefit from it. So in the process of aligning himself with that experience, he realized who he was. So what Swami is telling us is, if you consider yourself as an instrument in God's hands, you will start realizing that every moment in your life is an opportunity. Is an opportunity, it's a situation. It's created in such a way that you contemplate on the absolute.
Mm.
That you go back, your focus is on the absolute. So can we use every part of our life, like Swami would say, women have to cook, they have to cut vegetables, think that you're cutting your ego. So can you spiritualize every activity? Can you divine make every activity as an offering to God, such a way that you take everything as an opportunity and sanctify your action?
Right. In fact, you know, even as you're saying this, the idea of doing everything as an instrument, I recall a conversation that we had with a doctor, who mm-hmm. was an surgical oncologist.
Mm-hmm.
Right, who came to Swami, I think, in the 90s. One of the interviews which became very popular with our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So he was narrating about his first interaction with Swami. A lot of things led to him coming here. He was a doctor in an army hospital in Chennai. And he was led here by the senior in the hospital. He comes here, not very devoted to Swami. And he just kind of, you know, in a sense that I will come and disprove why it's a silly thing to go after people like this Baba. You know, mm-hmm. that was the kind of attitude with which he comes. He's sitting in the darshan and totally a misfit in the crowd there, because he thinks of himself as a great doctor who has achieved so much and who has to sit on the floor and all of mm-hmm. that. And next to him is a English man who's sitting. And he starts speaking to him. And he says, don't you know you have to sit cross-legged? Don't you know you have to put your hands together in doing namaskar?
Mm-hmm.
And he's being tutored in Indian culture by this, you know, Westerner who's sitting next to him.
Mm-hmm.
Then Swami comes and he's looking at Swami, nothing extraordinary in that experience. And he sees that Swami is taking letters from different people.
Mm-hmm.
So he asks this gentleman, what is this they're giving people in an envelope, giving Swami in an envelope? And he says, no, people give letters to Swami with their prayers and, you know, whatever submissions they have to make. And Swami accepts those letters. He says, okay. And then he looks at him and says, you should also write one.
Oh, okay.
He says, I don't have anything to ask of him. Mm. He said, no, you should write. And before he could protest any further, this man has already pulled a paper from somewhere and given him a pen. And he says, you write. There's time for Swami to reach our where we sit. Mm. So you write a letter. So he didn't know what to write. So he started the letter by saying, if you are God, give me. And he didn't have anything to ask.
Oh.
He said, I was a successful doctor. Everything was going well in my life. My family was fine. I had a good wife. I had a lot of respect for my colleagues. I said, what do I ask him? He said, and very intuitively, or you know, without his own active involvement in that prayer, he said, if you are God, give me peace. Okay. And then he said, why did I write peace? Because I'm pretty peaceful in life. It's not like I have some troubles. He says, whatever it is, it just came. So he wrote that down and he held the letter. Swami came to where he was sitting and Swami stared at him, looked at the letter, but didn't take it. And then he went away. So he also told the letter. Then he went back to Chennai. He says that once he went back to Chennai for the next 3 or 4 days, or I think a week, he was in a state of bliss that he could not explain at all.
Right,
he was totally not in his usual senses. So much in happiness and bliss, and the best part he was saying was his duties as a surgeon continued.
Okay.
Right, he was performing surgeries. He was consulting. He was patients were looking, consulting him. Everything was going, and some of his staff and nurses came and said, "Doctor, what is wrong with you? You seem to be a very different person. You don't get angry." And there were some things that he was doing in surgeon which was so intuitive, which was not his thing. He was performing better at what he was doing, right? So it gave him a sense, that realization, as you said, you know, that moment is given to you, but it's up to you to capture it.
Right.
He realizes that, you know, I am a doctor. I am doing all this. I am thinking that I am doing all this. The little bit of that experience of reducing this me seems to be showing that whatever has been doing seems to be doing better.
Much better than.
Right? So the idea that I am an instrument and whatever little egotism is there is, if anything, impeding this activity to happen through me. Right? So that understanding, as you rightly said, that change in perspective, I think, is what really matters. As you know, Swami was saying in that Dhyanavaini, I think.
Yes.
There he says that, you know, there are 3 stages in which action is done. Before you take up an action, should I take this up? Should I do this? When you're doing an action and after the action has been completed. So the way to deal with yourself, right? The reason why you're being told to think of yourself as an instrument is you're not able to think of yourself as God as of now.
Right
now, I'm not able to completely negate my individual presence and say I'm divine. So in this state of mind, you have to perform an action. You have to choose to perform an action and there are going to be consequences. So it is said that when you're doing an action, do it as an offering to God. So when you say I'm doing this for God, automatically things like, is this the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the right way to do it? Comes into picture. And when you're doing it, do it with the attitude of nimitta matram, right? I am only an instrument. It is only happening through me. And after having done it, you say, Swami, it is an offering to you. Whatever happens now is your prasadam.
Right.
Right. So it is actually a means by which you are able to deal with your ego, which is the reality right now. However much I might read Advaitam, right now I have an ego. I have to deal with it. And the way to deal with that is this technique of looking at yourself as an instrument.
Right? Very true. There's a beautiful discourse sometime in the year 2002, I think, summer course, where Swami is actually speaking about this concept of Bhutakasha, Chittakasha and Chidakasha. So what Swami says is, he talks about Bhutakasha. He says it is the manifested world. You see the variety, you see the cosmos, you see stars and you see tiny stars in the cosmos. It's not because they're tiny, they may be much, much larger than the sun. But since they are so far away, it takes so much time and for the light to come to Earth, reach the Earth. And he says this magnificent creation, this is all part of the Bhutakasha. And you see a huge mountain range. That is Bhutakasha. It's massive. But the moment you close your eyes, you can picturize that entire scene in an instant. That is Chittakasha. He says, immediately you are able to picturize it. So Swami says, in order to understand the reality of who is doing, what is happening, who has done this creation, why is this creation here, all these questions that come up in our mind, who is the doer, who am I creating the universe, is my mind creating the universe, there are so many theories that the thoughts manifest into the creation, whatever you are thinking, that's what is manifested. So all these concepts Swami has touched upon in that discourse very beautifully. He says, Bhutakasha, Chittakasha and Chidakasha. Then he says, in words which only Swami can explain, he says, what is Bhutakasha? Bhutakasha is the one you think you are. Bhutakasha is the one you think you are. That is the body. You think you are this body. So when you look at it from the point of view of doing action, you think, "Arey, I have to do this. This is what I need to do for this body. I need to have food. I need to maintain this body." That is all right. You can have food, you can maintain the body. But to think that you are this body, I need to maintain myself as this body, that is where the mistake happens. So he says, be aware of Bhutakasha, that is this entire manifested universe, where you have to do it as a sense of duty. The same duty that urges you to go and pour water to a tree or a plant, the same sense of duty is when you feed this body, when you're having food. So that is Bhutakasha. Then Chittakasha, he says, it's the level of the mind. And so the mind is something which is so powerful and it can grasp everything. But this is what others think you are. Chittakasha, he says, what others think you are. And, you know, in common life, in daily life, when you see it is so true, all the actions, nobody is coming and telling you to sleep. Mm-hmm. You're not sleeping for the sake of others. Because Bhutakasha says you have to sleep. Mm-hmm. This body is, you have to look after the body, it needs rest. Mm-hmm. So you sleep. Then you have to eat, because this is what, but you behave in a particular way in society. You want to tell something, but you don't say things. That is all Chittakasha, because the one others think you are. If I want to go from one place to another in an auto, oh, what will those people think that I don't own a car? Mm. you have to own a car. Mm. And you go in. So this is what others think you are. So you have entire social media is about that. You think you are telling people about what you really are, but it is more of trying to be accepted in the point of view of what others think you are.
Mm.
So this is all Chittakasha. So Bhutakasha is manifested Chittakasha. And then Chidakasha is what Swami says is the one you really are.
Mm.
And that is the Atman. So all the prompting is actually coming from Chidakasha, from the Atman. And it reflects in Chittakasha and Bhutakasha. So in the same discourse as Swami is talking about these three, Swami says, but the best way to, what is the best attitude to in life? He says the best attitude in life is to do everything with gratitude.
Mm.
So he says, automatically everything gets sanctified. Like you are doing an activity, do it with gratitude. Whether it is Bhutakasha, Chittakasha or Chidakasha, you are doing your activity in the Bhutakasha to maintain your body. Do it as an offering of gratitude. Do it with gratitude that, Lord, you have given me this body. So I am doing this as an offering to you. And Professor Kasturi writes in one of his books, he says, when they went to North India, when they went to Kashmir, Rishikesh, etc. There or South India, I'm not able to exactly place this incident, where Swami goes to a place and he establishes a temple where there is a saint who has been fasting for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And that saint has not had food for many years. And Swami tells that is not necessary.
Mm.
By doing that, your thoughts are being diverted to the body. So what you have to do is do you know, maintain your body as an offering to the Lord. Do it with gratitude. And that's why this word gratitude is something which Swami has spoken about so many times. And especially to students, he would often say, do everything with a sense of gratitude.
Mm.
And so doing everything as an offering to the Lord is how you sanctify every action.
Right. In fact, there is this interpretation which is given.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall where I read this, but I think it makes a lot of sense understanding the deeper meaning behind some of these epics. There's a story of, the account of Lakshmana having not eaten for 14 years and slept for 14 years.
Right.
And that's how he takes care of Rama and Mother Sita. So it is said that, is it even possible for a human person to not sleep for 14 years? In fact, they say that you can go for a couple of weeks without food, but you cannot go for a couple of weeks without sleep.
Mm.
Right? Because they say that it's so important. And here you're saying that for 14 years, there is this person who never slept and ate. The inner significance of that is Lakshmana never spoke. I mean, Lakshmana never slept or Lakshmana never ate.
Mm-hmm.
When the body needed food, it ate. When the body needed sleep, it slept.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Right? It was never him as the doer, because he was so, absorbed in that service to the Lord that he did not ever want to sleep or he did not ever want to eat. Right. So they say that that is how the idea of being an instrument, being a servitor of the Lord has to be. That it is not that you treat the body badly, as you rightly gave the example, just like how you go and water a plant, you take care of this food. In the name of spirituality, will we make somebody else hungry?
Correct.
Right. So if we say that it is okay for this body to be hungry, which means you're establishing that this body is more me than that body.
Mm.
Right, that's also an expression of ego, as much as
exactly.
Saying that I need to eat, my body has to be taken care of.
Correct. Right? So when we say that we are doing an action as an offering to the Lord, see, that also has to be done with discrimination.
Right.
It has to be done, will the Lord like it? Will the Lord accept it? What is it that the Lord stands for? You can't say that I will do something wrong and say I offer it to the Lord. So that is not what will be acceptable to the Lord. And because we have seen Swami and we have lived with the avatar, so many incidents and episodes in when we come across, they appear as incidents and stories when they actually happen. But like you said, every time you go back to the same book and read it again, you get new insights. Similar is the case with many of these incidents that happen. And one such incident is when Swami had gone to Madras.
Mm-hmm.
It must be in the 80s. This is again based on a conversation that Swami is having with the students on the veranda. And in some context, Swami says, do you know why I stopped wearing garlands?
Mm-hmm.
Why I stopped accepting garlands? Because as devotees would know that earlier Swami would accept garlands,
right.
And you could actually garland Swami, and that's such a beautiful feeling that actually garlanding Swami. And some of the alumni would share with us that on their birthdays, they would actually take the garland and they'll put it on Swami, and that was such a satisfying experience. And even in the old Patha Mandir, we have heard Srimati Vijayamma Garu and others say that one of very active things that they would do is to actually make garlands. They would take huge Tulsi garland. And Swami, who was explicitly said that he loves flowers, because these people would offer these flowers to Swami, and Swami would give them that opportunity. Suddenly, Swami decided to stop accepting garlands.
Mm.
And Swami says in the veranda, Swami says, do you know why I stopped accepting garlands? He says, because when I went to Madras, they brought a huge rose garland. And he says, the huge rose garland, which was costing more than 2,000 rupees at that time.
Mm.
And they brought it in a special vehicle, and they wanted to put that huge garland on me. And I told them, first you leave the garland down. Don't even get it on the dais.
Mm.
So they had to leave the garland down. And that day onwards, I stopped accepting garlands. So although this action was meant as an offering to the Lord, Swami says, this is not a natural course of action. This is something you're doing for your pomp and show.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to say that, oh, we are great devotees, so we have brought this big garland. Then automatically it is not acceptable to the Lord. Swami just said, stop. And then because of that, everybody lost the opportunity to offer a garland to Swami. Mm-hmm. Another beautiful incident which comes to mind is, like, when you're doing an action as an offering to the Lord, it has to be sanctified. It has to be something which the Lord will accept. Yes, on one side, the action itself has to be sacred, but the intentions with which you do the action, like, for example, here, the devotees wanted to offer a garland to Swami. The action itself is very pure. The action itself is very noble, but the intentions with which they went ahead and got the huge garland is not very aligned to a spiritual way of life. Another incident which happened is there were a group of people who came walking all the way from Anantapur. I think again this happened sometime in the 90s. So Padayatra. So they came walking all the way from Anantapur doing bhajans and this. And we also know about these Varkaris who come all the way from Maharashtra.
Mm.
So that is a part of the tradition, and they come walking all the way, and Swami would always shower a lot of love on them, and Swami would bless them when they reach Puttaparthi. And then these people came from Anantapur walking, and then Swami did not come out from the room, and they reached the mandir, and some of the elders went to Swami and said, Swami, they have come walking all the way from Anantapur. Swami said, I never asked them to do that. I didn't tell them they should come walking on this road to Puttaparthi. What I meant was they should walk on the path of Sai, not on the path that leads to Puttaparthi this way. Why? Because the intentions were not very noble. See, you may do the action as an offering to the Lord, but if your intentions are not pure, if the intention, because that's what the Lord sees. When a hunter felt that the eye, we have that story, the eye from the Shivalinga is bleeding. What he did, he took out his own eye and he offered it to the Lord. But the intentions are so pure. When he felt that the Lord is hungry, he brought meat. He brought what he was eating and offered to the Lord, and the Lord accepted it.
Right.
So I think the intentions with which you do your action is equally important.
Right. I think the whole idea, as you know, Swami is saying, the portion before this also, I think there was something on doership before that discussion on living in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was about doership and when you're God, how can you be wrong? You know, that discussion was there. It is all in sublimating the mind, as Swami would say.
Correct.
Because this idea of doership, the idea of doership itself is based on ahankara.
Mm.
Swami says ahankara leads to the idea of doership leads to the idea of enjoyership, and that's how you're bound, right? Karma and the consequences of karma binds you like that. But the reality is, as I was saying, that right now there is an ego, you have to deal with that. There is a mind which thinks that it is separate from God.
Mm.
And the way for that is, which may not appear intuitive when you listen to it,
mm-hmm. right?
When you're saying that you are God, and then you're the very next moment you're said that think that you're an instrument of God, it appears like they don't gel with each other. I mean, mm-hmm. it's contradicting each other. But this is a means to that. In fact, there's a very beautiful conversation, I think last year or sometime, we had shared as part of our Thursday Darshan,
mm-hmm.
where Swami is having a conversation with students in Kodaikanal.
Okay.
Right? Where one student asked this question very simply. And, you know, now when you think of it, you could ask such questions directly to Swami.
Swami, correct. Right?
Imagine. So he says, Swami, you say that on one hand, you are God. And then on the other hand, you're saying that you have to reach God,
mm.
right? If I'm already God, then who has to reach where,
mm.
right? It's a very simple question. I mean, that's a question in Advaita which always pops up. Who has to realize?
Correct.
I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am divine.
Mm.
Then who has to realize? Who is the one who has got to understand that I am not this body and this mm. one? So he says, Swami, then if I am God, then where is the question of me reaching God?
Mm.
And Swami cuts him short and says, if you know you are God, there is no reaching.
Mm.
He says, if you have the idea that I am God,
mm.
then that is the reaching. There is nowhere to go. There is no God to reach.
Correct.
Right? Swami says, because you don't have that feeling, you have to do all this. So he says, these are all means by which you, first of all, lessen the damage. The whole idea of Karma Yoga is that, as much as possible, lessen the ability of you to get further entangled in the world. And as you're doing that, as you're saying, you know, you, there are two kinds of actions. Either one binds or one liberates. Even as you're forced to do action that might otherwise bind you, do it in a manner that it will not bind you, and also add activity that will liberate you.
Correct.
Right? So this whole thing of doing things as an instrument of God, I think one of the most beautiful opportunity that you have, especially having lived with Swami, having Swami in your life, right? It's not about the physical Swami. You really can practice this thing that I'm only an instrument of God. As a mother feeding your child, you can practice this. As a father taking care of the family, you can practice this. You know, I'm only taking care of my... You know, so many parents have this experience when they came to Swami and asking for children, you know, Swami to bless them with children. And Swami would bless them. They would come back a year later or 2 years later with their children. Swami would say, now don't forget that those children were given by me. Right? The attitude to parenting completely changes.
Correct.
That this is somebody entrusted in my care by Swami. I am only being an instrument. That child is being nourished by Swami. I am only a conduit for that grace which is coming. And that completely sublimates attachment, which is the cause for all the problems that comes thereafter.
Correct.
Right? So as devotees of Swami, I think this is so... I wouldn't say easy, but it is so available to us to practice that in everything. As a speaker, we can practice that. As a householder, you can practice that. As a programmer, you can practice that. Anything that you do, you say that, Swami, I am here. I am doing your work by carrying out my duties.
In fact, I remember when I had this opportunity to play the sitar in front of Swami. Absolutely zero. I had no formal training. It was just there at home. My mother was learning for some time. And then I thought, okay, why not? I got interested because it was there at home. And I started picking up and just playing. And one of those occasions, there was an opportunity to play. So I asked Swami, Swami, can I play the sitar? And Swami said, you will play? If you play, the entire crowd will run away. He said, then instantly I corrected myself. Swami, you have to play. That is correct answer.
What a beautiful, you know, doesn't miss an opportunity.
Doesn't miss an opportunity. See, you playing the sitar or not playing the sitar is not important for him. What is important is that message should sit inside and you should feel that message. You should, you know, believe in that message. Such a beautiful thing, like Swami said. Then I told Swami, you have to play. But you see the power of the mind. Instantly you forget. So this happened just before the evening bhajan. Swami came and then I said, Swami, you have to only play through me. Then Swami said, that is correct answer. Swami told and Swami walked past. Now after the bhajan, there were a couple of elders who came and started speaking to me practically. They said, see, you want to play the sitar in front of Swami, but are you sure you can play it? Okay. And then they said, you know, Swami will not be happy if you focus all your time on practicing sitar to play in Mandir. You should do well in your exams as well. You should get good marks. You should not slack in any other activity. Keeping all this going, will you be able to play in Mandir? Because it is not a small thing. And then instantly I gave up. And I said, no, sir, then tomorrow I'll tell Swami that I can't play. So they said, no. You just think about it. See, you should think about it. And means basically they're telling me, be practical. I mean, it was just a spurt. It came spontaneously, that prayer. And Swami gave an answer. And so quickly I've forgotten the answer that Swami gave. And when this was going on, I was kind of quite dazed. And I was standing near the Ganesh temple immediately after bhajan. And when this conversation happened, and I was quite wondering, oh my God, reality sunk in. Am I really going to be able to play? And one of our seniors, a student who is 2 years senior to me, he just walked by and he asked me, hey, what happened here? Swami was speaking to you. What happened? Then I told him, see, this is what Swami told. And why are you bothered? Yeah, Swami will play through you. Very casually he told me that statement. It means this is the answer Swami gave. Swami gave that he is going to play. And now you are worried that you have to play. So very casually he told me, why are you worried? Swami has told you to play. He will play through you. So see, that is the gap between knowing that, you know, Swami is the one who is going to play, so, and you are just an instrument, and actually believing in it and living in it. The mind, you know, so quickly comes and it brings all the ego to, oh, how will I play? What will I do? Suddenly it becomes...
That's why it's a sadhana, right?
Right.
Swami would say, example which you've given so many times, when Anil Kumar sir asked Swami, Swami, what is sadhana?
Mm.
And Swami asked him, have you been in APSRTC bus?
Uh-huh.
Right? He said, Swami, where is sadhana? Where is APSRTC bus? And he said, yes, Swami, so many times I've come from, my native place, I've come in that bus only. And Swami says, how are the roads, on which these buses go? He said, Swami, most of them are very dusty roads. Then Swami said, see, when you're going in the bus, if you notice from outside the bus, you will find that there is a cloud of dust behind the bus.
Mm.
Because the bus is kicking up all the dust.
Correct.
Right? Swami said, what happens inside the bus? Do you feel the dust? He says, no, Swami, because the bus is moving. And Swami said, the moment the bus stops, the same cloud comes and engulfs the bus.
Correct.
So Swami said, Maya is like that cloud of dust and sadhana is the bus moving. He says, as long as the bus is moving, the Maya will only be at your heels. It will not cover you.
Mm.
Moment you stop, the Maya will engulf you.
Engulfs you.
So Swami said, sadhana is only that constant practice of trying to remind yourself, you know, I am an instrument, or I am doing this only as an offering to Swami, because it's so easy to get lost in the world. You know, a simple thing of I am doing it only for Swami, how many times in a day we forget it?
Correct, correct. Right. And because of, you know, again, like we said, all these spiritual truths, you know, kind of we see them in new light, and we see they come alive. They come alive when you actually experience these things. There is this beautiful story narrated by an ophthalmologist.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this article in one of the websites. And this is a doctor, Dr. N. Gopalakrishna. So he's an ophthalmologist, and he narrates this beautiful story, this incident which happened, which shows that God is a doer.
Mm-hmm.
We are just his instruments, and he does everything. And when you just flow with his plan, everything is perfect. Maximum you can contribute is imperfection. All you have to do is just accept and move, and he will take care of everything, because there are no mistakes in God's plan. This is a beautiful incident. He says this happened in the year 1982. So, you know, we had this Anantapur alumni who called themselves as Kingdom of Mother Sai.
Right.
So there's a group of Anantapur alumni, and they would undertake certain activities. So like seva activities, and they would do certain things. They would go to the village and serve. And so as a part of that, this used to be, they used to have their annual celebrations on Christmas Day. So every year on 25th December, they would come and present that these were the things that we did, etc. Right. So as a part of the Kingdom of Mother Sai, there was a medical camp which was organized between 18th to 26th of December in 1982. And this doctor, I think he had come from the US, and he had come for darshan, and they had requested him, sir, can you be a part of the medical camp, because this we are conducting. He said, I would love to be a part of the camp. And so he was kind of aware that there's going to be a medical camp, but he did not bring any of his surgical implements and instruments,
mm-hmm.
because he thought this is just a general medical camp. Then he landed here, and Swami was very happy. He came on 18th and inaugurated this medical camp, which was being conducted in the junior college, Satya Sai Junior College in Puttaparthi.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami came and inaugurated this medical camp, and everybody was happy. And on 19th, when they sat for darshan, Swami came and said that, why don't you go and start examining all the elderly ladies in the ashram?
Mm-hmm.
many of them will require cataract surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
See, because they are advanced age, you have to do cataract surgeries. Why don't you go and... And then this doctor said,
mm-hmm.
Now I started getting completely restless because he had no implements, no instruments with him. He had no trained nurses with him.
Mm-hmm.
The medical camp was being run. There were some 5 or 6 doctors who had come, okay. And from different departments. And the students, the alumni themselves, were helping the patients.
Right.
So you know they were nursing them. Suppose there's an external wound, you want to nurse it. So you can do that. You can still, with basic training, you can do that. But to assist in a surgery, you require a trained nurse. And he said there were no trained nurses. There were a bunch of well-meaning students, but they couldn't obviously help in a surgery. So he was wondering, how is it going to happen? And Swami came and Swami said, and the first surgery, to add to all this confusion, the first surgery should be done on Srimati Pedda Potamma.
Oh.
Pedda Potamma was 85 years of age. And she is the one, for the sake of listeners, who many of you will be knowing her, was the one who had darshan of Shirdi Sai and Satya Sai. So she was there from the time of Shirdi Sai. And she was 85 years. And when the doctor examined her, she, was really not fit for surgery.
Mm.
So she had hypertension and she had a lot of agitation, anxiety and all that. And so obviously she was not fit for surgery. And Swami said, I will come for the surgery. But do the surgery on 22nd. Do the surgery on 22nd at 2 p.m. This is the instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suddenly the doctor was wondering what's going to happen. And on 21st evening when they went, Swami said, tomorrow, 22nd, do the surgery at 2 p.m. And Swami said, I will also come. Now, nothing. They said, now we don't have a choice. We have to just start getting ready. Get a clean bed, sanitize the area. Try to do whatever you can to build a temporary operation theater to do the cataract surgery. And so he was like just doing things because something had to be done. The next day, Swami was going to come. And then a series of beautiful things happened. He said, on December 22nd, that is the date when Swami said, do the surgery at 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
On the morning of December 22nd, suddenly a group of nurses arrived from Visakhapatnam. And they were specialized in ophthalmology. They were nurses in the ophthalmology department. So they came for darshan randomly, quote-unquote randomly. So they came for darshan. And after darshan, they saw this medical camp and they went and inquired. They said, we are trained nurses in ophthalmology. Do you think you can use our help? The doctor was like completely happy and he was so happy. He said, of course. And he was so grateful that Swami had sent the trained nurses for the surgery. And so immediately they got into action and they were getting everything prepared. But then what about instruments? He had no instruments, surgical instruments. And on that day, at 9 in the morning, there was a doctor, a psychiatrist who had come from the US, who was coming to Prashanthaniliyam for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe after the morning darshan, he said, let me take a walk, a casual, quote-unquote, casual walk. So he was walking around and he happened to start climbing the hill and he went towards the administrative building. So when he went near the administrative building, from there, he saw a group of people and there was some activity and a group of people gathering near the junior boys hostel, junior boys college, where the medical camp was going on. So he was kind of intrigued as to what activity was going on there. And he found out that a medical camp was going on. Now, he is a psychiatrist who is coming for the first time to Prashanthaniliyam. So obviously, in psychiatry, you don't have surgical instruments. But when he told his friend, who happened to be a surgeon, that he is going to Prashanthaniliyam for darshan for the first time, his friend gave him a brand new set of surgical instruments for ophthalmology.
My God.
And he said, you take this set with you to and offer it to Baba from my side. So he had that set with him. Now, he being a psychiatrist, and he had the set of surgical instruments, which was given to him by a friend. So he came and offered that set. And sharp at 2 o'clock, Swami came for the surgery. And of course, the surgery went on very well. And his doctor was completely, you know, taken aback. How Swami arranged every small detail. And then Swami called the doctors for an interview after the medical camp was over. And so Swami said, called the doctor and said, "So what did you do to Pedda Potama's eyes? So did you give her a sight back or did you take out the existing eyes?" He said, "I broke down." And he said, "I cried and fell at Swami's feet. So I said, 'Swami, you have completely removed my ego. I now realize that I am only an instrument in your hands. You are the one who is doing everything. And I am just an instrument.'" And he fell at Swami's feet. And then Swami said, "You know, you should always do with this bhava, with this approach, with this realization that you are just instruments in God's hands. When a patient comes to you, don't treat the patient like that, you know, harshly. Speak with love. And God is the resident of your of everyone's heart. And with that bhava, if you do, that action gets sanctified."
Beautiful.
Such a beautiful, the entire incident, how every minute detail Swami had taken care.
Right. In fact, I mean, so many stories come to mind even as you're saying that. I mean, and I'm sure every devotee would have an experience, you know, where when things start falling into place, right?
Yes.
You realize, and there are even stories the other way around.
Correct.
When things don't fall into place, and then you later realize why these obstacles were coming, and they were also, you know, divinely ordained.
Correct.
And then you see that there is a master string puller. But the whole idea is this learning.
Yes.
Swami said to that student, "If you know your God, you're reached." Right? If you have that understanding, everything is taken care of. And it's all in that understanding, that maturity. Is again, an episode I might have narrated before, these youngsters from Hyderabad, who later used to be called Hyderabad Youth. Right? Swami used to give them a lot of time. When they used to come as a group, and Swami would give them a lot of attention. So what happened is, once they told Swami about the activities they had done, Swami was so happy. Right? Swami was so thrilled, like a child, that these boys were doing this in the weekends. And Swami blessed them profusely. And now what happens is, automatically the boys know that this is what pleases Swami.
Right.
So they went back. They did more. And they came back and they again told Swami. Swami was more thrilled. And they went back and they said, "You know, Swami is so thrilled to hear what we've done. The next time we should take pictures and show it to Swami." Right? And Swami will be very happy. So they again did that. You know, the whatever activities they would do, they would take pictures of that, show it to Swami. And Swami was understandably more happy. And in this pursuit of trying to please Swami, they did more activities, more variety in the activities. And finally, at one point when Swami had called them for an interview, they placed on Swami's lap a huge album, right, of all the activities. Different medical camps in different places and vocational trainings and all that. And Swami was looking at that, like, you know, with the enthusiasm of a child. And that enthusiasm was kind of infectious. They were also enthusiastic to tell Swami what they'd done. And Swami said, "Hey, what is this?" He said, "Swami, we did a you know, dental camp in this particular village." "Oh, okay. Now, what is this?" "Swami, on computer learning training in this one we had done here. And we did this program in this college. We did this thing in that and everything." Swami was also going through everything. "Inta chesara?" Swami asked. "Oh, you have done so much. You have done all this. What did Swami do?" He asked. Right? And then it literally hit them like a ton of bricks. You know, in that enthusiasm, "Swami, we did this, we did that, we did this here, we did that here." And, you know, the first stage is to initiate action and to ensure that you're doing something that pleases Swami. But the next step of the learning is, are you able to remember all the time that we are only the instrument?
Correct.
Right? So Swami said, "You're doing all this, I'm pleased with all that. But don't think that you're doing it." what a way to put it across. Swami said, "What did I do?" And they literally fell at Swami's feet and said, "Swami, you did all this. You know, it was not we who did it." Swami said, "Don't forget that." Right? So that idea of being an instrument is such a, you know, it's like a fire that purifies.
Correct.
It is a fire that burns all actions, as Swami would often say. That attitude will ensure that the action gets severed from the consequences.
It is the love.
Right.
It is the love with which you do.
Absolutely.
And I think that is the binding factor between the devotee and the Lord. It is the love with which you do it. Swami is really not worried about what you do. In the sense, yes, you will automatically do what is befitting to be offered to the Lord. But it is the love with which you do. In fact, again, one of the conversations, a very simple thing. Swami was asking the warden, who are the good boys and who are bad boys?
Loaded question.
So I was asking the warden, you tell me, who are the good boys and who are the bad boys? Then Swami asked one of the boys, is this boy a good boy? And then the warden said, Swami, no, Swami, he's not a good boy. Then Swami said, how can you say he's not a good boy? Then he said, Swami, he doesn't have concentration. He's very restless. He's very, oh, okay. Then who are the good boys? You tell me, I will give them reward. And then they say, Swami, this boy is good, that boy is good. Then Swami asked, is he good only from outside or from inside also? And then the warden realized this is getting somewhere. And he said, Swami, we can only see what is outside. We cannot see what is inside.
Mm-hmm.
Inside what is going on, only Swami knows. We can see only what is outside. Then Swami says, for me, all are good. When you wear a glasses, blue glasses, you see blue everywhere. And I wear the glasses of love. Swami says, I wear the glasses of love. So anything that is done with love, anything that is offered with love, that I accept. Then Swami says, because you have badness in you, you see. If you wear bad glasses, you will see only bad outside. If you wear good glasses, you will see only good outside, good everywhere. And for Swami, he wears the glasses of love all the time.
Right. I think we'll just go ahead in this particular thing, because there are a few other things which gets, I wouldn't say clarified, but Hislop kind of voices some of the doubts which will come in our mind when we say that.
Correct.
Whatever we do is, we are only being an instrument of God. Because when Swami says, consider that you're an instrument and Sai acts by using you as his instrument, Hislop says, that implies that it is foolish to think that we act. For the fact is that the action is the result of prompting by God. And Swami says, yes, the action is prompted by God. Then Hislop says, but Swami, it is not clear in practice. I forget, this is an incident I think we had come across a couple of weeks back.
Yes.
Where he had a surgery in the general hospital and he wanted to offer a check to Swami in lieu of that. And he offers it and Swami says, no, don't give it to me because... you know, it means like it's a transaction.
Correct.
It's after all our hospital. I did for you. You should not give money for that. So he says, I forgot to bring the check I wanted to donate to the hospital. Then after reaching the veranda here, I remembered it and felt I should go back to the room and get it.
Mm-hmm.
That action of returning to our room had to be prompted by Baba. But then after Baba prompted me to get the check, Baba refused to accept the check.
Mm.
The principle in practice is not clear. You know, what a beautiful example he has taken.
Correct.
Because he wanted to offer a check.
Mm.
And I mean, and this is possible only when there is God in form in front of you.
Correct.
Right? Because you can see that God is rejecting, but then you're saying that God only prompted the act of wanting to give. So he says, Swami, you prompted me to give and it made it a little more complex by making me forget it and then going and getting it and then you're refusing to take it. And then Swami says, only in that way was there an occasion to teach you how Swami regards such matters. Mm. What a beautiful way of putting it. No?
Correct.
Had you given the check from love, perhaps Swami could have accepted. But you were giving in return for the operation. But you are family and there is no payment in family. For work outside the family, there may be some employment and some payment. Then Hislop says, but it was Swami prompting me that sent me for the check.
Mm.
Swami said, yes, it was Swami prompting you. Then Hislop says, Swami, the lesson of the check is learned.
Yes.
It is very clear case of payment for services instead of the family feeling. Now I take it to be the case that whatever is done by me is being prompted by Baba. Swami says, that is the correct attitude, that is the correct way. And then Hislop says, but could not a person then say that he had no volition and therefore would sit and do nothing unless Swami moved him? Can a man choose to be lazy? Swami says, yes, he could be lazy. By the prompting of Sai. Swami says, yes. So that is the completion of that, the whole idea of doership. But, you know, very beautifully, there are multiple things that get into it. But I think what is getting highlighted in this is, it is not a simple learning that happens, you know, through this idea of I am an instrument.
Mm.
You know, the learning happens in multiple levels, and also there are multiple unlearnings that have to happen, which are also orchestrated in the process of, you know, events being placed the way they are.
Very true. And like you said, because you have Swami in front of us, you know that the same Swami is prompting us from within and the same Swami is outside reacting to a particular action that we are doing. And Swami says here also the same thing, the attitude with which you do. Because Swami is wearing the glasses of love.
Mm.
So through the glasses of love, when Swami saw, he was trying to give the check as a payment for the, because he had a surgery there, which Swami didn't accept. He said, because he sees only love, he says, your family, there is no payment in family. But then if he had offered it with love, then Swami might have accepted. See, that is what Swami says. And this becomes very, very important in every, like when we were in the hostel, when we were, you know, do so many activities. Like, for example, we were in the card room in the arts department. We would like to make a card for any given festival. And so much depends on the attitude with which we make it. Was there harmony amongst all the boys when they were doing the card? You might make a most extraordinary piece of art. It might come out really beautiful, but Swami will not look at it. But it might be something very, very simple, something, but all of us came together and did it together, and immediately Swami will respond. And this has been an experience we have had several times because of being in the hostel and because of directly doing things which we could offer to Swami. This attitude of trying to do things that quote-unquote pleases Swami. What really pleases Swami is the attitude with which you do it as an offering. So that has somehow got, you know, Swami has blessed us with that opportunity to do that over and over again. And I think that is a lesson that should stay with us all through our lives.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's the, you know, as we were saying, the whole journey starts with wanting to please Swami and having, you know, embarked on a journey, embarked on a task. Okay, this is what will please Swami. This is what I'm going to do. For that matter, every seva, I mean, every one of us as part of the organization, when we do seva, that's the whole idea. We know that this pleases Swami.
Mm.
We take up an activity, but having done the activity, I mean, some of the devotees, when they do seva in this manner, the way they're trying to internalize this in action, you know, there is no one way. I think it is only how you want to do it. There is a group in the West Indies, right, which we had an opportunity to speak with them. They do this thing of building homes for people who are in need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They have these prefabricated homes which,
yes,
they go and build. So what they would do is, you know, they have a flourishing business. They've set aside a lot of money from the profits of that business to do this activity.
Mm-hmm.
The condition that they put before making a house for a poor family is, after we have built this house,
mm-hmm,
you should not try to find out who we are.
Oh, okay.
He says, because this is being given to you as a gift of Swami,
mm,
and we are only instruments in this. So if you try to find out who we are, who came and gave us this, then you will be, you know, you will feel grateful to us and you will want to express your gratitude to us. He said, nothing like that. Believe that it has come from Swami. We want to believe that it has come from Swami and we have nothing to do with that. So they would do it with that attitude, you know. There was another devotee from, I think, Pondicherry, Bishu was once mentioning. So this person, I think, again, he has his own business. He has a medical shop or something like that. And every weekend, he would go to the villages nearby and he would do whatever help he can do to those people. And the way he would carry himself over there, you know, there was this person whom he had helped a lot, mm-hmm, right? And when I think one of our boys had gone to visit him, he had gone there and he found that one lady came and started verbally abusing this man. And this person was very calm, right? Mm-hmm. He did not react at all. And she was very upset. She shouted at him and she walked off. And then this brother asked, "What happened, sir? Why is she, you know, so upset with you? Why did she shout?" And in a very casually, he said, "No, she has a lot of problems and all that. A few months back, she tried to end her life."
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't do it. So, you know, she was very sick. So I took her to the hospital. I took care of all the expenses and got her completely out of it. But the mind is not yet, you know, reconciled. And, you know, she's still in that depressed state. So something else must have happened. She's coming and shouting at me. So this person asked, "But, you know, anybody in that position would feel that I did so much for you and you're coming and shouting at me like this. Aren't you, how can you be so ungrateful?" And this person said, "But how can I think like that? Swami saved her life. What do I have? She's coming and shouting at me."
Beautiful.
Right? Why should I think that I did and how dare she come and shout at me? He says, "For a moment also, I can't afford to think that I went and saved her life or I spent for her medication." So I think so many devotees who have in their own way tried to, are trying very, very hard to live this, that we are doing what pleases Swami, but we are doing it merely as an instrument, trying to vanish, become invisible as much as possible in the process.
In fact, there is a quote which I read of Ramana Maharishi. I'm not able to recollect the exact words, but the import of that is says that only a jnani, only a person after reaching absolute wisdom can do meaningful action.
Beautiful.
Right. He says only such a person can do meaningful action. Then they ask, how do you, what is the approach? Like, how do we understand this whole concept of doership and non-doership, that God is the doer? He says, look at this gopuram. So there's this huge temple. And he says, look at the gopuram. And there is the image of one of the beings holding the gopuram up. So in all the sculpture, you see, there are these angels or there are these, you know, yakshas sitting in the gopuram and holding the gopuram up. So he says, observe this. And you see, you feel that this person is straining a lot to hold the gopuram up. But is that the truth? He says, that is not the truth. The gopuram is well rested on the earth. Mother Earth is actually holding the gopuram up. But this person is sitting there thinking that he's holding the gopuram up. So, you know, that is the story of what Swami would say. Like, there was this gentleman who was traveling by the train and he had his entire luggage on his head. And somebody came and asked him, "What are you doing?" He said, no, see, the train is carrying so much of luggage of everybody. So I thought I will save the train some weight by actually carrying." He said, "But you are also sitting in the train." So ultimately, God is the doer. We think we are doing. And, you know, we think that we need to take responsibility for the actions. But the moment the attitude changes, I think the actions will automatically follow suit and they will become sanctified.
Right. I think that is the essence. And that last part which we read out, I think clearly Swami shows that, you know, even events which otherwise happen, which we are not able to relate to with this concept, as Hislop was saying, that there are some places, I mean, like this, we cannot understand, especially in our own life. There are some things that we repent about. We are ashamed about. We've done some mistake. It's very difficult to attribute that to Swami.
Correct.
You know, some mistake that you've done and you don't want to repeat it again, you can't look back at that portion of your life and say that it was prompted by Swami. I mean, that goes against all our understanding of morality and trying to understand. But the fact is, even at one point, we will say that we were permitted to do that so that I can understand this thing. As Swami is saying, you know, I made you do the mistake of wanting to give a check and then going, forgetting it and going back and getting it, so that this lesson becomes so, you know, memorable and clearly understood by you. As one of the elderly devotees once told me, you know, many times in life, you're all very young now, but you'll do a lot of mistakes. Don't worry. Right? She was saying, because only when you do mistake, you will feel humble. Mm-hmm. You know, that humility will come. And it's all the way the thinking changes. You know, humility is also, where is the question of humility when you're divine? Right? You really look at it. Mm-hmm. Where is the question of pride? Where is the question of humility? But humility is an attitude which leads you closer to this understanding of who you really are. just as much as gratitude helps you reach there, or just as much as the idea of nimitta matram, or the feeling of being an instrument.
Correct.
All of this leads you to that ultimate thinking of who you really are.
Of course, if you in the Gita, you must have touched upon it, or maybe I don't know if you have come to the 12th chapter.
Not
as yet.
Right.
So it says, Anapeksha Shuchir Daksha Udasino Gatavyata Sarvaramba Parityagi Yomad Bhakta Same Priya. So who is that person who is dear to me? Anapeksha, who has no desires, who has no... is it possible to do an action without any desires? So one way of sanctifying is just to offer it to the Lord, so that you are not affected by what are the results of that action. Suchir. So these are the different qualities that the Lord has said, that such a person is dear to me. So suchir is cleanliness. Whether it is external cleanliness or internal cleanliness, both are important. So how do you keep yourself clean? Clean is not just keeping it away from dust. It's keeping the mind clean from, you know, disturbing thoughts, or keeping the entire process of doing the action clean. So anapeksha suchir daksha. Daksha is having the determination. So when you have the determination, Swami would often give that poem, you know, don't ask, but having asked, don't give up till you get what you asked for. So that understanding and realization is what that determination. Udasino gatavyataha. So, you know, not attached to your action. So, you know, that develop that sense of detachment. Sarvarama parityagi. So you offer everything to the Lord, surrender to the Lord. Yomad bhakta same priyaha. He says, such a person is dear to me. This is what the Lord says. And I think, like we said, all these things are connected, and sanctifying action is a very, very important aspect in the life of a seeker, because that is so practical at one level and so vital at one level, but it is the deepest, has the deepest consequences. Because the moment you think you are the actor, you get bound in the action, you think you are facing the consequences of action, again it binds you, then you like something, you desire something, and then you're caught in that web. So that is how the cycle of birth and death goes on. The way out of this is to sanctify each action by offering it to the Lord.
Right. And I think the greatest advantage for us is, as I think a couple of weeks back you had said, there is a goal. The sadhana is nothing but practicing that state that you will reach eventually.
Correct.
The whole idea is that that perfection, you try to practice it. Perfection was in front of us, right? Mm. In the form of Swami, we knew. And he was not merely sitting there. Mm. He acted, you know, active. He was active all the time. He was doing something or the other.
Mm.
But we could see, you know, in what way actions were dispensed by Swami.
Yes, sanctifying actions is like, it is a very practical thing which has to be done. And you can achieve perfection by doing it again and again and refining your, Swami would say, sanskarana, sanskriti, that is refinement. You know, what is perfection in action? Because the Gita talks a lot about that. One of the elders in one of the Trai sessions, he said, the definition of perfection. What is the definition of perfection? Perfection is giving the maximum attention to the minutest of details.
Mm.
Giving maximum attention to the minutest of details. So that is how Swami would do. Every action that, you know, you have seen, he would get involved at such a minute level, and he would, you know, give complete attention to that. In this conversation with the student, Swami says that, how do you keep the mind engaged? The moment the mind is idle, like you said, the sadhana, the moment you become idle, everything, your prarabdha karma comes, this comes, that comes, all your thoughts keep going here and there. He says, you have to do action. Keep the mind busy. Eating, sleeping, playing, jogging, drinking, everything. Everything is action, but then do it with that attitude.
Yeah, there is this, probably we'll conclude with that. Padma Kasturi aunty, she narrates that episode when Prashanthi Nilayam had just been set up. You know, we've seen pictures of that.
Right.
That literally that lone building standing on the hilltop.
Exactly. You
know, on a hillock kind of a thing. So then Swami said that, you know, it'll be nice if we grow some plants around here. And it's so barren here. So then they got some saplings from nearby places. So all these devotees had this duty of watering these plants, right? Every day they would, you know, pass these, you know, pots of water and they would water it and all that. And Swami also would come and supervise. I think at one particular point, Swami said that you could see the, you know, result of all that work after a few months. And Swami said, you all have worked so hard, you know, we should, you know, capture this memory. So someone had a camera at that time, you know, the old cameras. Swami said, we should take a picture, right? So they went to the terrace of the mandir, I think. And Swami was the director of photography that day. You know, he arranged the whole thing, who should stand where. And Swami said, bring all the pots, you keep it here. So that, you know, you document that it is for this particular purpose. And Swami made all of them dress up. And Swami said, boy, men this side, women this side. And you stand like this, this angle, Swami will stand here. It almost took the entire day or half a day to get this whole thing done. They stood, they posed, they took pictures and no pictures came out. There was some problem with the camera. Right? So they never had a picture at the end of the day. But she, you know, when she narrates it, she was saying that Swami knew this all the while.
Correct.
Swami knew that there's going to be no picture, but no effort was left, you know, undone in this whole process. So much so that she's saying that today I'm thinking of that incident and I'm filled with so much joy.
Correct.
Right, even probably a picture would not have given that much
of
joy. You know, the Swami who knew the result of what was going to come, still he did not hesitate to put that. He's saying, you know, the minutest detail gets the maximum attention.
Attention, true. Right.
I think we'll conclude with that, dear listeners. Thank you for joining us. Do tune in next week too. We'll continue this conversation. There's going to be a shift in the topic, though it is in the same chapter. We'll do that when we meet next time. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet and we'll leave you with a song. And on the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Ganesh for the next episode of Veda Jignyasa. Happy listening.
सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है तुझको मेरा प्रणाम
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है तुझको मेरा प्रणाम
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है तुझको मेरा प्रणाम
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है तुझको मेरा प्रणाम
तुझको मेरा प्रणाम ओ साईं बाबा तुझको मेरा को मेरा प्रणाम
तुझको मेरा प्रणाम ओ साईं बाबा तुझको मेरा
शान तोड़ो
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो
दुख भंजन में छोड़ो
भजन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो
दुख भंजन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो
भजन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो
द्वार खड़ा हूँ मैं दुखिया सुन ले मेरी पुकार
सुन ले मेरी पुकार ओ साईं बाबा सुन ले मेरी पुकार
सुन ले मेरी पुकार ओ साईं बाबा सुन ले मेरी पुकार प्रभु कोई नहीं है तुझको मेरा प्रणाम
तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है तुझको मेरा प्रणाम
तुझको मेरा प्रणाम ओ साईं बाबा तुझको मेरा प्रणाम आशान तोड़ो
मुरली मनोहर आशान तोड़ो
दुख भंजन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो
दुख भंजन मेरा साथ न छोड़ो
द्वार खड़ा हूँ मैं दुखियारा साईं बाबा सुन ले मेरी पुकार
सुन ले मेरी पुकार ओ साईं बाबा सुन ले मेरी पुकार
सुन ले मेरी पुकार ओ साईं बाबा सुन ले मेरी पुकार तेरे सिवा प्रभु कोई नहीं है तुझको मेरा प्रणाम